I think I'm on.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you. Well, it's a real privilege to have the opportunity to come to North Dakota and visit with you. The take charge topic is, as Daryl said, we had a conference call and trying to decipher what each of our topics really should cover so we didn't overlap. I will tell you that we're going to integrate a little bit of what you heard this morning. And because I've played an interesting role as the executive director of the Five State Beef Initiative, what we've done is we've had to think about how do we put together all of these things into a production system or a vertically coordinated system. And our goal was never to, as a university or as a cattlemen's association or the other partners, to create a business structure and run it. Okay, I don't think the universities are good at that. But what we wanted to try to do is to create an infrastructure that would allow somebody then to go on and commercialize that, okay, in maybe in several different forms. So what we'll do is, and if I can figure out how to run this, I want to start out with a little bit of what did we have to go through in terms of our thought process. And so what we did is the five states are Indiana, Michigan, Illinois, Ohio, and Kentucky. And we did receive some grant dollars to do some of those things. And one of the stipulations of the grant was that we had to make a transferable model. Not that all the pieces needed to be transferred, but I think as some of you as individual producers or as states may be thinking about how do I get more value from the animals that we produce, either individually or collectively. And I think one of the other things, and it's been really kind of a challenge, at least for me, as I go around and I visit with producers around the five-state region, and one of my challenges has been in the seed stock side. And we've got some seed stock producers, and that is probably not reflective of necessarily the group that's sitting in here, but we have some of your colleagues sitting around in different states that say, okay, I'm going to sell bulls, and people are going to come to me, and they're going to buy them because I exist, okay? Well, folks, that's probably not going to happen, okay? And I think one of the things that we need to think about is how do I help my bull buyers sell their calves to greater advantage so that they're going to come back to me and buy next year instead of buying a $2,000 bull, they're going to buy a $3,000 bull, okay? So those are some of the things. And so we had to go through and we said, okay, what's it going to take to compete in a commodity market? And at least in Indiana, it's real hard for us to think about how do we compete against Kansas and Nebraska and Colorado and the major cattle feeding states around the country. And so we started out and we said, okay, what was the National 2000 Beef Quality Audit? What did it say? It said basically we have a low overall uniformity and consistency, inappropriate carcass weights, and inadequate tenderness. So that became kind of a starting place. And then we said, okay, what is it that really consumers want? Well, food safety. Are they going to pay a premium for that? No. They're going to expect it or they're not going to buy our product. All right? That's pretty simple. What about value-added convenience products, the heat and eat type products, meal solutions? The answer is yes. They will pay more for it. And I think at least part of this increased demand that we see in dollar-fed cattle now, okay, $1.50, $55 based on some carcasses right now, a $28 spread between select and choice. Those things are happening because, in part, because of convenience items. Not totally. Okay, there's other factors that are going in, but convenience is an issue. The pre-cooked pot roast is not a convenience item. Now, I argue that it is, but my wife will get up at 6 o'clock in the morning or 6:30 before she goes to work, and she'll put a roast in a crock pot along with some vegetables and so forth. And when we come home, the meal solution is taken care of, all right? But most of our customers are looking at 4:30 in the afternoon and 75 to 80% of the households don't know what they're going to fix for supper. Well, a pot roast is not an answer at that point. Other things like guaranteed tender. Would consumers pay more for a guaranteed tender product? Yes, all right? Our challenge is how do we get there? And I will tell you that part of our initiative, we're spending $450,000 to develop a technology that will give us a reading on a carcass 24 to 48 hours after that animal has been killed as to what its tenderness will be. I don't know if we're going to find the solution, folks. All right? But some of the technologies that we're using are pretty interesting, okay? And there's some promise associated with those. Is it going to be available tomorrow? No. Is it going to be available 5 years from now? Maybe. I don't know. Other things that we can do is we can use aging technology, okay, to enhance or to assure a more tender product. That could be dry aging. And I get, it's fun, okay? When I talk to producer groups, I ask producers, how many of you got your own beef in the freezer? Okay? Folks, look around at how many, see how many hands are up, okay? The point is that it's real difficult for those of us that have our own beef in the freezer to understand what it is that the typical consumer that's several generations away from agriculture, what they are experiencing. And that's one of the reasons why CAB has been such a popular program, and more here lately than it was in its infancy stages 15 or 20 years ago. Okay? Because we've moved into this convenience area, we've moved into value-added products, and that's one of the reasons why. What else do consumers want? Source verified? To a degree now, yes. In the future, probably more so. And particularly as we look at the global marketplace. Vitamin E. Okay, is it worth $4 or $5 to add to the price of a finished steer to add vitamin E to the diet for the last 100 days of the feeding period? Well, not too many places are paying a premium for that vitamin E-fed steer. But it makes a difference at the retail level. Doesn't make any difference at the RHI level. And the reason for that is that I'm looking at, in one environment, a raw product, and color is important. In the case of the restaurant, I get a cooked steak. Color of that lean before it was cooked is really not an issue. Okay? Environmental stewardship. Other things. Niche programs, branded programs, CAB-like programs. Okay? In the middle meats, historically, that's been where the real premiums are at. But if I've got to add quality grade and I also add some subcutaneous fat, okay, I can have a negative effect on yield grade, seam fat, and some of those things. So you could argue that the ends of those carcasses, the chucks and the rounds, may actually be devalued a little bit. All right? And we're working on that as an industry. Other niche markets, things like Laura's Lean. Okay? There are consumers that like that product because of the attributes of lean, no antibiotics, no hormones. And those people would buy that product irrespective, okay, of it's probably its price. And if they didn't have that product available, they probably wouldn't buy beef at all. So it's hard for me to argue against a product like Laura's Lean. All right? Locally grown has some attributes that consumers are, in some areas, are at least willing to pay for. Animal handling and well-being. And we'll talk more about some of those here in just a second. Demand for our product, in my opinion, Darrell, you kind of alluded to it this morning, I think our demand for our product starts here. So we need to understand the consumer. Now, what do retailers and restaurants want? Well, they want a differentiated product. It's amazing to me. We've been working on, I've moved away to a degree from nutrition and management into really what I'm going to call economic development, okay, with the 5-State Beef Initiative and a couple other things that we've got going on. And one of the things that I found extremely interesting is that independent restaurants, okay, when you ask them what they want, okay, not very many of them say that they want a CAB product. Now, that may be disappointing to some of you, but why is that? It's because each restaurant up and down the street or up and down the highway can have a CAB product. That's not the same thing in the retail side, okay, where you've got market areas, okay, and there's kind of that no competition clause. So the independent restaurants are saying, we want a differentiated product. We want quality, we want consistency, we want portion control, we want those things. But what differentiates our product is something like locally grown, or source verified, or it's the sauces and the seasonings that I use to prepare my product that differentiates me from the steakhouse down the road. I found that very interesting. And Larry, maybe you've got some other insight into that, but it's a different kind of a market niche. This group, in my opinion, responds to and has some effect on change. What does the future hold? Well, we can continue to produce cattle that have that lack of uniformity and consistency, or we can start to think about how do we put together a system. And we're seeing more and more alliances, co-ops, marketing arrangements popping up. I think our real challenge in the industry is that we're segmented. And we've historically thought of ourselves as seed stock producers or commercial cow-calf producers or backgrounders or cattle feeders, and we've not looked at how we should be relating to these other segments. This graph was kind of already shown, all right, in terms of the number of USDA certified programs. But if you go back way over here to the 78, can anybody recognize which one that one was? That was a CAB program. Look how long it took before other branded programs came along, and once they started, there was a multiplication effect. Now, some of those certified programs won't exist tomorrow. Okay, some of them are going to be tried, some of them are going to fail. Some of them are going to be very successful. A large number of them, okay? But what we're seeing is a move away from commodity beef. And if you look at the trend in terms of percent of cattle that are sold on formulas, contracts, packer grids, whatever, it's going up. And to the point that by 2007, CattleFax estimates that 70% of the cattle will be marketed on some kind of these arrangements. That means then that only 30% is going to be in what we call the spot market or the cash market. So that's going to determine how and probably drive how we set base prices for things. Are we going to continue to do it based on the live market and then back calculate it? Or are we going to calculate things on a box basis and some of those things? I think those are going to be some interesting challenges as we look forward. This is kind of what I was talking about. We can be the segmented industry over here on the right, or we can start to think about how do we become the supply chain and how do we work together in putting together a branded product that might be able to be sold at more money. And obviously CAB and this audience, okay, has done that. Now, I'm not going to say that each individual in here has participated in that program, okay? Nor am I saying that everybody has, one size fits all. But I think we need to be thinking about how do we add value, and branded products are one way that might be able to be done. What are some of the value-added considerations? Okay, as a seed stock producer selling seed stock, how do I add value not only to the product that I'm delivering to my bull buyers, but also how do I add value to the calves that producer is selling so that he comes back to me? Considering an alliance, okay, I think we have to start thinking about that. Considering a branded product, and some of you may be interested in starting a branded product line. Looking into the future, I think, is another consideration that we need to be thinking about. We've created a couple programs, okay, and I'm not here to promote those programs. I'm here to talk about some of the things that we've gone through and some of the things that we've considered as we've moved through the creation of those. As it was mentioned in my introduction, we have 21 partner groups, okay? That is a huge deal, all right? All these partners, nobody's getting paid. This is all volunteer. And as an executive director of this, it's a little bit like herding cats. Okay? Everybody can come together at a meeting and say, this is what we need to do. But when they go back home, they've got other things to do, just like you have more other things to do. You've got crops to grow. You've got other businesses that you're running. You've got, in addition to your cow operations. So those are some of the challenges, I think. If you look at, and I'm putting this up here not because I think that this is necessarily the format, but there needs to be, if you're going to consider an alliance or a co-op or something, you need to consider what is the structure of that thing. Is that structure put together correctly? And we can go back to examples like, for example, Future Beef. Did they have the right business plan? Okay? And it's real easy to look back at hindsight and say, well, they did this wrong, they did this wrong, they did this wrong, they did this right. Was their vision right? Yes, I think it was. Was their business plan correct? Probably not. Okay? Otherwise, they'd probably still be in business today. So I think those are things that we need to be thinking about, either as I'm investing into some of those or I'm considering being a part of that alliance or co-op. Now, how can a partnership or cooperation between groups and individuals be of value to me? Well, I think it really gets down to building the infrastructure. And I think that that's what we've done. Have we done it perfectly? No. Can I give you another hour's worth of presentation and tell you what won't work? Yes, I probably can. All right. But what I think we need to be thinking about is how do we create a system and an infrastructure that will allow producers to hit one new market at a time, okay? Not multiple markets necessarily, but one at a time. One of the things that we did that was kind of unique is we put together, not committees, but we put together action teams. And they were appropriately named that way because we expected them to do something, okay? And there's a number of them, and you can kind of read through that list. One of the things that we did is we started a producer certification, all right? Most states, okay, represented here, probably have BQA programs. Okay, why did we start a producer's training and certification program? It's partly because of market access, because of a marketing tool, okay, both for producers and retail, customer trust, and something to point to. Our certification includes beef quality assurance / animal health, genetics, data management, animal well-being and handling, and environment. We also have created a web certification, okay? And producers anywhere in the country, if they choose, they can go to this web and either be certified or, in the case of those of you that are certified, how do you all get recertified at the end of my certificate period? Of course, the goal of BQA is to provide the customer with a healthy, wholesome product. We have preconditioning requirements, okay, as part of our program, and we can talk about all the specs for that. I threw this one up here because one of the things that I get from a lot of our producers is that, you know, I sold my calves through a preconditioned calf sale, and they weighed 600, or they weighed 650 pounds. But there was another group of calves at that sale that weren't preconditioned. I didn't see a value. Okay? I didn't get more price per pound. Well, folks, the preconditioning program, I will tell you, 80% of the value, every way we've cut it, or more, of the preconditioning program is in the weight gain, okay, between weaning and the time I sell them, okay? And if I get a premium for them on top of that, it's going to represent 20% of the value or less, okay? And so this is one of our producers that's got, you know, 80 to 100 head of calves going through this, and he's done this 3 years in a row. Actually, we've got now the fourth year data that I didn't put up here and a fifth year that he's currently collecting. But the point is that when he started measuring things, he found out that, in fact, his calves gained well. And number two, that he made more money. But he also found out that if I tweak some things, like reduce my ration cost by adding maybe some byproduct feeds or whatever, I can make more money, okay, without sacrificing performance. And that's what we found. We also have a genetics requirement, okay, in our system. And basically what we're doing is we're certifying bulls for 3 years, and we've got a couple producers sitting in the audience that are using that, okay, technology. We're using power scores. It was something that was developed by Roy Wallace at Select Sires a number of years ago. That thing has been tweaked a little bit. But basically what we're doing is we're calculating a performance power score and a carcass power score. The thing that's been really interesting to me as an educator is that now all of a sudden some of our commercial producers are starting to understand EPD information in a way that they've never understood it before. And they're saying, oh, this makes sense. So it might be a tool that some, and I'm not saying that this is the right system. Daryl, I know, is working on other selection indexes and tools. I'm just saying that whatever you can do to help your customers understand the information that you're giving to them a little bit better, probably is to your advantage. I should mention that we've got over 1,500 bulls certified in the last couple of years. Importance of data management, building a resume. If you want access to a value-added market, we're probably going to have to start getting resumes on cattle. And one of your own, John Sticka, has said that. Okay, what constitutes a resume? Things like genetic history, source verification, management practices, feedlot and carcass history on calves that have come through your program in the past. We're in an emerging age of informed action, okay, or information. And I think we've got to think beyond data. I think we've got to think beyond information, and we've got to build knowledge, okay? That means that you're probably going to have to share your information with others, and they're going to have to react to that, okay, as an example. And then, of course, there's the integrity issue. CAB and Tom Field, Ken Conway, did a survey, and you may have seen this before, but what are feedlots willing to pay more for? And what I've highlighted in the middle column in white is those things that the feedlot said that they were willing to pay more for. Up at the top, breed composition, sire and dam performance. Almost 80% of the feedlot said, we'll pay more for that if we know what that history is. Vaccination schedule, implant history, nutritional management. Feedlot, previous feedlot gain, quality grade, and yield grade on previous sets of cattle that have best genetics coming from this operation. I think we're talking about a responsive system. Okay, we've historically talked about product flow up the chain from seed stock all the way to consumer, but we probably need information to flow both directions. All right, and we need feedback information. And I will tell you that getting carcass data back has been one of our major challenges. Okay, on a consistent basis, I think CAB with their licensed feedlots have made tremendous strides. If you go to or your cattle go to a CAB feedlot, your likelihood of getting carcass data back is significantly better. We need more feedlots, okay, doing that kind of thing. Data management. I put up here in the five-state deal, what we did is we created a partnership with Emerge Interactive. I don't know if that's the right one. The AIMS program is a great one, all right? There are other databases, but somehow getting your information into a form that you can look at, you can sort, you can change, you can review, you can benchmark, you can do some of those things. And we chose at the time we were making that decision to go with Emerge system. I think we're going to look at more and more some kind of a national mandatory identification program, okay, as being viewed and reviewed. And we may be there someday. It may start out as a voluntary program, but electronic identification is one option. What we're doing in our system is we're using paired tags, okay? So we've got a vehicle tag and an EID tag that are matched together, and a producer out here at the ranch level does not have to have an electronic reader. If I drop those, you see the 0859, okay, kind of number? That corresponds with digits that are on the electronic tag. That technology exists, okay? So I can use the visual tag as my herd management number, and the electronic tag is tied to that. Those are the kinds of technologies that I think we're looking at. This happens to be one of the data sheets that we use. Here's some of the, just real quickly, the data, comparing the five-state data against the National Beef Quality Audit. And one of the things that's kind of interesting is that our quality grade distribution is more desirable, and so is our yield grade distribution. Okay, I was encouraged by that. One of the premises that we started with was is that cattle that came from our region were relatively rich in terms of quality grade. This data kind of supports that. These cattle, by the way, were not genetically stacked. These were producers that agreed to work with us. They were probably not necessarily average producers. Okay, but anyway, that's kind of where we were at. Another thing is that we can talk about premiums all day long. Okay, but one of the things that our data set drove home very clearly is that the first thing that I need to do as either as a cattle feeder or as a stocker operator or as a cow-calf operator is I need to eliminate the outs, okay, the cattle that don't conform. Let me give you an example. Okay, let's say that the discount between yield grade 3 and yield grade 4 is $20 a hundredweight. All right, how many CAB carcasses do I have to produce to offset that one yield grade 4? 7, roughly. Okay. CAB carcasses is offset one yield grade 4. Okay, in some markets. So we've got to pay attention to managing the outs. And before I'm going to chase premiums, I'm going to manage the outs. Okay? And then once I get that in control, then I'm going to go for the premiums. All right? That are associated with that. Another part of this is that we have to manage costs, and Barry dealt with that this morning. But this is a group of producers in Illinois using Darrell's program, okay, out of Iowa State. These are some producers that were on the SPA record program for 5 years. Okay? Notice what happened to their cost of production. They measured it, then they could figure out what they needed to adjust. Okay? In my case, I found out that I could not afford to own a big round baler. I was better off to hire somebody to bring a big round baler into my operation. Those are the kinds of things that sometimes we don't see when we just look at our operation and with a broad brush. How can producers get rewarded for quality? Don Scheffelbein at the old Monford, now Swift, said that the lion's share of producer value in their alliance comes from having information to make improvements. And I believe that. All right. The payoff may come in part this year, okay, the first year I do it, but it's really a long-term payoff. It's a stability issue. New markets. We're looking at larger premiums, but we're also looking at larger discounts. All right. And managing the discounts, I think, is extremely important, and then going after the large premiums. Just an example, and this is not true for today's market, but it's a little bit more of a traditional market. You know, you look at a yield grade 4 versus a yield grade 2, not uncommon to have a $20 hundredweight differential. All right? Over here, the select is $5 to $15 higher than the mid-choice. Today, that's probably more like $30, okay, between those two grades. But we need to pay some attention to that. I would say that over on the left-hand side, however, the yield grade 4 problem, is that really a genetics problem? Is yield grade 4 a genetics problem? In part, maybe it is. Okay, what's the other factor in there? The feeding management. Okay, how long do I choose to keep those cattle in the feed yard? And if I've added another 50 or 75 pounds of carcass weight, which we've done over the last several years, is it surprising that yield grade 4s go up? It's not to me. Now, part of it's genetics, yes, but part of it is also feeding management. Carcass weight and steak size. This is some Iowa State data that looks at 600 to 800 pound carcasses. And what does ribeye area compare to in terms of steak size? Most consumers go into a restaurant and they don't want a 16 ounce steak. I do. Probably a lot of you do. Okay? But remember what I asked the question a while ago? How many of you have beef in your freezers? We're not typical consumers. Okay? So carcass size is an issue. And I also understand, as a producer, that I still get paid on pounds. You know, if I can push that 949-pound carcass weight when the discount kicks in at 950, that's kind of where I want to be. But I want to do it with the quality and the consistency that I can get. Importance of frame size, all right? And Daryl and I were talking about this last night. But this would be for steers, okay? So if you've got a frame size 6, in my opinion, if you've got a frame size 6 cow, she's weighing about 1,250 pounds. And we argued about that a little bit because the cows are a little bit longer, they're a little bit thicker today, et cetera, et cetera. And they might not be any taller. But roughly a 1,250-pound cow, mature cow size, moderate body condition, will produce about a 1,250-pound steer, all right? Now, the heifer mate to that is going to be lighter. All right. So I can go, if my carcass targets are 6 to 850 pounds, I can live with a frame size 3, okay, on the steer side. But the heifers are going to be significantly lighter than that, and they're going to be under 600-pound carcass weights. All right. My feeling is, and I tell my beef production class, that a frame size 6 is probably about where I want to be. Okay, low 7, that's okay. But we're looking at eliminating outs, the carcass size, the quality grade, the yield grade, and the defects. And actually, that's a frame size 7 and a frame size 3, okay, just for comparison purposes. Other things that we've looked at that we think are important, animal handling and well-being. It's an industry issue, it's a consumer issue, it's a retailer issue, and it's an animal issue, all right? What we've had historically is this very pastoral view of how we raise animals. Green grass, blue skies. Well, folks, in March, in Indiana, okay, I've got a lot of mud. Okay? And I think probably a lot of you do. Okay? That is not that pastoral setting. Okay? I just assume nobody drove by, okay, during that time frame. But what the consumer is being bombarded with is a lot of other images. Okay? They're several generations away from the farm, and they don't understand what it is that we do. Okay, so they're looking at these billboards that PETA put up, that Jesus is a vegetarian. Do you want fries with that bloody headstand, you know, hanging there? Those are the images of what we do that are being projected to the American consumer. That's a problem, okay? Now, we're seeing more and more guidelines, rules, audits, whatever being implemented. Fortunately, that's not down here at the farm and ranch level yet, but it probably is going to come. Okay, we're probably at some point in the future going to be subject to spot audits, okay, on our farms and ranches. All right. Now, is it right or wrong? I don't know. All right, but the fact is that it's probably coming. And if we use Europe as an example, we're starting to see a lot of what they're doing migrate across. Another area is this whole issue of environmental stewardship. Understanding the language. going to hearings, whether it be in your state, okay, relative to your state environmental regulations or at the EPA level, we need to stay on top of it, all right? So one of the things that we do is we talk about this in some of our training and certification. It's about staying one step ahead. It's not about saying that you can't do something. It's just making you aware of if you do certain things, these rules start to apply, okay, whether it's the size of the operation or whatever. Why are we considering vertical coordination? Well, it's about profit. It gives you partners to work with. It's market access. All right? And I think we're going to see increasing market access if you precondition, okay? If you're working together, if you're source verifying, if you've got resumes on your cattle. It gives you bargaining power because there's strength in numbers if you work together. In my operation, I've got 30 cows. I've got some red ones and I've got some black ones. I got steers and I got heifers. I got early born calves and late born calves. If I take my calves to the local sale barn, no matter what I do to them, okay, to add value, vaccinate them, precondition them, do all of those things, and they get sold in groups of two or three, folks, should I expect a premium? Ain't going to happen, okay? Now, if those calves can be put together with like kind and put together a pot load, now we change the dynamics. That gives me an opportunity as a small producer to act like I'm significantly bigger, okay? It's those kinds of things. Increased predictability in the feedlot, on the rail, and on the plate. I put together some challenges, okay? One of the things that I think is my responsibility, if I'm going to talk about these programs and work in this economic development area, we have to think about moving beyond tradition, okay? The way Dad did it, the way Grandpa did it, working together. Special sales, and I've alluded to that. Getting feedlots involved and committed. Okay, one of our real challenges in our system was getting feedlots that says, yes, I will get you carcass data, but whenever they load the cattle up and they sort the pens, they put six tag calves on with a group of 30 non-tag calves. It cost me $300 to send somebody in the packing plant to collect carcass data. With six head at $300, that's $50 a head to collect carcass information. That's a problem. Okay? So it's those kinds of things and getting some commitments. Getting carcass data back on a large scale. Year-round supply. Okay, if you're thinking about a production system or a supply chain. Business structure, and I've alluded to that. If you're going to get into these areas, then you really need to think about what is the business structure and what's the business plan. And then the expertise beyond the supply chain, sometimes we need to ask for some help. Okay, and not be... And I talked about the herding cats and commitment. I will tell you that where we're at today is that some of the things that we've created from the five state have now been commercialized. Okay, United Producers Incorporated, located out of Ohio, have created the business plan, taken the vision, taken the objectives, okay, of this five state partnership, and now have commercialized it, okay, into a program that they call Managed Beef Alliance or MBA program. Indiana Farm Fresh Beef, and I'm not going to spend very much time on that, but it's a certified freezer beef program. I can do that in Indiana because I have people. Okay, we live in our consumer market. If I was located in West North Dakota, western part of North Dakota, where I've got more cattle than I've got people, a freezer beef program doesn't work as well. But some of your states, this will work. Another program that we're just in the process of doing the feasibility and the business plan for is a program called Premium Indiana Beef. It's a locally grown, locally raised, 14-day age product, processed through one of 101 small processors in our state. Okay? With the idea that we want to become a supply chain to independent restaurants and some retailers. All right? And it's a product that they're asking for, and we're in the process here in October. We're going to do a test market. I'm going to conclude with this. This is what I think we need to start thinking more about. Okay? It's about people. It's about profit, it's about pride, it's about product, and it's about partnerships. All right? And getting those things to work together to your advantage in your individual operations and for your customers, I think is what we need to be thinking about. It's been a pleasure being here with you. Thank you.